Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So what if we could train our minds to think like literature's greatest problem solver, Sherlock Holmes? It may not be elementary, my dear Watson, but our next guest says it is possible, and she's going to tell us how. So joining us now is Maria Konnikova. She's a columnist for Scientific American and author of a new book, Mastermind, How to Think Like Sherlock Holmes. By the way, she'll be talking about the book and signing copies at the Book Court Bookstore tonight at 7, 163 Court Street in Brooklyn. She'll also be at the Tribeca 92nd Street Y next Wednesday at noon. Maria Konnikova, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Why is Sherlock Holmes your model, first of all, for a clear-thinking, insightful problem solver? Why not Steve Jobs or I don't know who?
Well, Sherlock Holmes is someone who, to me, really embodies the concept of mindfulness. It's funny that you should bring up Steve Jobs because I think that that's one thing that they have in common. But Sherlock Holmes is someone who can appeal just across the generations to, you know, generation after generation, and everyone can adopt them as a hero for their time because there's something very universal about his approach and about his methods.
So your book revolves around the idea of the brain attic. Can you explain the concept?
Of course. So the brain attic is Holmes's metaphor for the human mind. How do we store information? How do we take it in? And it's a very useful way to think about it because if you think of what an attic is like, you know, there are so many choices you can make. Are you just going to put boxes up there with random junk? Are you going to label everything? Are you going to organize it? And are you going to think that, oh, I'll just put it up here. I'll use it at some point. I have plenty of space. And then at some point you walk up there and there's no room. Exactly. There's no room. And you have no idea where anything was, even though you thought that you would be able to identify it.
So how does that relate to our day-to-day cognition?
So day-to-day, this means what do we choose to remember? Which memories do we choose to encode? And how do we choose to encode them? So when we're remembering something, are we just going to throw it up there? Or are we going to tie it to our existing base of knowledge? Are we going to put it neatly labeled in a file so that we can access it? Because the thing about memory is you really only know what you can remember at any given moment. Otherwise, if you ask me about it and I can't retrieve it, it's like I never knew it.
You can do that? You can neatly label something and put it in a file of your brain?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a very useful way of thinking about it. If you're mindful about what you're remembering and what you're putting in your head, then you can do almost a mental label. You can say, okay, I want to remember this. So how do I go about this? Is there anything in my past that I can relate it to? Is there anything in this moment that's going to help me retrieve it? The more cues we have, the better able we are to remember it. The senses are very important here. So if you can, for instance, associate a smell, a sound, touch, anything with it, then you'll be able to use those to retrieve them later on.
One of the major points of the book is the power of concentration.
Yes.
Why is it so important, particularly in today's short attention span society, or maybe that is why it's so important, and how can we improve our attention?
I think that we don't realize just how finite our attentional ability is. It's a resource that we only have so much of. And as soon as we start splitting it, we are no longer paying attention to anything the way that we think we are.
So you're one of the detractors of multitasking?
Yes. Well, multitasking is a misnomer. We can't multitask. What we're actually doing is switching our attention very rapidly from task to task, and that's incredibly taxing. There's research that's been done that shows that it really depletes our resources because the more that we task switch, the more tired we get, the more tired our brain gets, and so the more we are at fault when we're trying to pay attention to any one thing.
Is it true? Is there research that shows that we can't pay some attention to two things at once?
Yes, it is actually, you're going to be switching your attention. It's very rapidly and it's on, you know, you probably won't be able to measure it. You will think that you're really paying attention to both. But if I look at your brain at that time, I will see that your brain is constantly switching between tasks.
You also write that one of the most important ways to facilitate imaginative Sherlock Holmes thinking is through distance. Mm-hmm. Explain.
So you can see distance in a number of ways, and one of the most important is distance in time. So it's very important when you're trying to solve something to realize the importance of taking a step back and giving your mind the space to rest. If you're continuing with the mind attic analogy, it's like opening up a space in that attic so that you can look at everything and play around with it. If your attic is filled to the brim, you're not going to have the room to do that. But if you have that distance, if you're able to step back and to look at everything, then you're able to really conceive things in different combinations.
Do you have any good Sherlock Holmes plot lines to exemplify any of these things?
In The Red-Headed League, that's one of my favorite early Sherlock Holmes stories. After the client comes in and has this absolutely crazy story about being hired just for his red hair, everyone wants to know what Sherlock is going to do. And he says, I'm going to go and smoke a pipe. This, to me, is a three-pipe problem. And that exemplifies what I mean by distance. So instead of running to start solving the case, instead of interviewing people, instead of leaving his apartment, he just sits back and says, three pipes, I'm going to think about it.
My guest is Maria Konnikova, columnist for Scientific American and author of the new book, Mastermind, How to Think Like Sherlock Holmes. We've got a few minutes left. People listening to this may think they cannot learn to retrain their minds as they get older, but you spend some time highlighting the idea of incremental intelligence versus entity intelligence. What's the difference?
So this comes from the work of the psychologist Carol Dweck, who talks about different mindsets. And if you have a mindset that your intelligence is fixed, that it can't grow, it will actually affect how you learn, and you won't be able to learn as rapidly. Now, if on the other hand, you think that intelligence is fluid and that you can get better and that with practice you can improve, that in turn affects how you learn. You're better able to learn from mistakes, and your mind becomes smarter. So it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy.
And you've said if there's one takeaway from your book, it's that the most powerful mind is a quiet mind.
Yes, I think it's incredibly important to recapture unitasking as a concept and to realize that the more we're able to quiet our mind and turn off distractions, the better able we will be to pay attention, to concentrate, and to really observe the world.
So do you do this in your own life? Do you resist doing things that other people you know do in the name of multitasking?
I try. It's not always easy. I sometimes have to have self-binding software. I use Freedom on my computer to block the internet, for instance, when I'm writing, because I found, even though I thought, oh, of course, I'm not going to check my email, I do it. These are very difficult habits to break.
And so there's software that makes it harder for you to do that.
Yeah, there's software that turns off the internet. I specify some amount of time, and I can't access it no matter what I do.
By the way, there's been something of a renewed interest in Holmes. There's the highly acclaimed BBC series, Sherlock, which places Holmes and Watson in modern-day London. There's also the CBS series, Elementary, which radically reimagines Holmes as a recovering addict in present-day New York, with Lucy Liu starring as Watson. What makes Holmes such a perennial favorite, ripe for constant reinvention?
I think Holmes really embodies kind of every man in his approach to detective ability, because his powers aren't superhuman at all, in the sense that he explains his methods and we can all aspire to be like Sherlock Holmes. And I think that accessibility makes him someone we can always relate to and someone we can always update for the modern world.
Maria Konnikova, columnist for Scientific American and author of the new book, Mastermind, How to Think Like Sherlock Holmes. I feel smarter already. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Maria will be talking about the book and signing copies at the Book Court Bookstore tonight at 7. That's at 163 Court Street in Brooklyn. She'll also be at the Tribeca 92nd Street Y next Wednesday at noon. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.